I started thinking like a client. What does a client actually care about seeing? You know, they don't care about seeing my super fancy transitions and all that stuff. They care about what I'm going to do for their business, and they have some obstacles to overcome before hiring me. So if my website can help them overcome some of those fears and doubts and obstacles, then they're going to be more likely to actually contact me for a project.
Welcome to season one, episode number 5 of the Double Your Freelancing Podcast. It's the final interview. And as you know, this season is all about lead generation, getting high quality clients online and offline. In this final interview, you're going to meet Matt Olpinski, a freelance web designer based in Rochester, New York. Matt's done a great job of getting local and regional clients to find him through laser focusing on a local SEO strategy. So Matt admits in this episode, he's not an expert at SEO. He's a web designer. That's his thing. However, he's been able to successfully rank and get local clients by doing some marginal minor tweaking to his current website. And in this interview, Matt walks through everything he's technically done. How has he changed his page titles? What's changed about his URL structure? Stuff that could be done, frankly, in whether it be a few hours or a day or so, that has made a permanent and lasting impact in the overall online success of his freelancing business. Before we get to the interview, once again, FreshBooks, thank you for sponsoring season one. FreshBooks makes the accounting and getting paid junk that comes along with your business, my business, and really any small business as painless as possible. It's 100% browser-based. Handles pretty much all of the administrative stuff you're going to need in your business. And it also makes it super easy for your clients to be able to log in and see invoices that they've already paid, along with paying unpaid invoices and doing that all through their browser. So let FreshBooks know that you appreciate them for helping make this podcast possible. You can go over to freshbooks.com/double. And from there, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial with no credit card required. So do give it a shot and let me know what you think. I'm Brennan Dunn, BrennanDunn on Twitter. If you sign up and you get set up with it, let me know what you think. Just send me a tweet. And I'd love to hear, especially if you've had a more manual, more, outdated process for doing this in the past. I'd love to hear how it's going for you. And again, don't forget, doubleyourfreelancing.com/season1. Get the ebook we've built, we've created, we've written for this season. It includes everything we've discussed. It's free, it's concise, it's to the point, and you're going to love what we've put together. Again, doubleyourfreelancing.com/season1. Today, I would like to introduce you guys to Matt Olpinski. Matt is a UI designer based in Rochester, New York. And what we're going to be talking about today is how Matt's done exceptionally well, I should say, on not only cornering the local market in New York, but also getting people at what I like to call like when they're ready for a project, meaning Matt ranks extremely well for terms like freelance UI designer in New York, and he's ended up getting well over 200 qualified leads a year just from SEO. So Matt, welcome to the Double Your Freelancing Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me again, Brennan.
Cool. So you've been on before. Assuming that a lot of people who are listening have already heard that episode, this time I want to really focus on SEO. I really, really want to focus on what you've done to kind of systematically generate all the leads you need through your website. Walk us back a bit in terms of how you got started, what you were doing at first to get client projects, and then kind of take us to what you're doing today.
Sure. So if we go back a handful of years, my goal out of college was really never to be a full-time freelancer in the beginning. I just wanted a good job out of college. I went and I got a good job out of college. I'm up here in Rochester, New York. And on the side, I was still doing freelance projects. So I had a website. It was a portfolio site. It was very focused on myself. It was really just a display of work, and it was like most other design portfolio sites out there. And I was perfectly happy with that arrangement, working full-time and then doing some freelance work on the side. And I continued to just kind of because I wanted to evolve that site and try to find ways to make it better, I was relaunching it, you know, every year or so with some tweaks, mostly design related, because I wanted it to look better. I learned something new. I think a lot of people go through that, especially designers. They want to, you know, make it pixel perfect and try new things with that. So around that time, I got a hold of some of your materials and had this revelation that I was kind of doing things wrong if I wanted to get more freelance projects. And that was coupled with some frustration of not being able to grow my freelance projects as much as I wanted to. It was like, you know, 1K, 2K, something like that, you know, $30 an hour, $50 an hour, but it wasn't really ever growing more than that. And I was like, there's got to be something else. And so I grabbed one of your books. I think it was The Blueprint. And that kind of sparked this idea of like, I need to really be focusing my website on my clients first, or my potential clients rather than myself. So with that switch, things started to get a lot better. I got, you know, I was getting more leads. I was getting, you know, better rankings. The value of each project was increasing, but I didn't really understand too much of why that was all happening other than, you know, I switched my positioning. So for a while, that was the big thing for me. But as I continued, you know, it's been 2.5 years now since I've been freelancing full time. And I've kind of been trying to work backwards in figuring out why. There's got to be more than that. Like, why exactly am I getting so many leads? Especially as I've been running my own newsletter and blog and everything, people keep asking me, how are you getting so many, you know, leads? And I think a lot of that has to do with SEO, which is what we'll be diving into more today. And that buzzword gets a bad rap, but I think there's a lot of very simple things that I've done that I think anybody can do to improve their rankings if they just take the time to focus on it a little bit.
Okay, so you mentioned first off that sounds like the first thing you did was you changed your positioning, meaning you changed the way that you positioned yourself, I should say, for lack of a better way of putting it, to interested parties that stumble upon your website. So I assume what you had before was very technical, very more focused on more the medium or something like that, whereas now you're more focused on the clients and their needs. Is that correct?
Right. Right. So it was a switch in the design of the site. But it was also a switch in the copy and the language that I was using. So, you know, the old website was, I'm a UX designer. I build websites. Here's my work. Contact me. And I think that's
a typical freelancer website.
Very, very common for freelance websites, for designer websites, especially. And that was it. So when I started to switch that, I started doing things like, you know, hey, I build websites that help businesses grow. Okay. Just something as simple as that, you know, and changing, you know, some of the text in the buttons and kind of the, you know, increasing the visibility of testimonials and maybe metrics on like why the project was successful. Things that clients, I started thinking like a client, what does a client actually care about seeing? You know, they don't care about seeing my super fancy transitions and all that stuff. They care about what I'm going to do for their business, and they have some obstacles to overcome before hiring me. So if my website can help them overcome some of those fears and doubts and obstacles, then they're going to be more likely to actually contact me for a project.
Okay. So instead of focusing on you as a designer care a lot about design and interfaces.
Sure.
You focused more, it sounds, on messaging and copy instead of just relying on a lot of visuals, a lot of portfolio imagery and stuff. Okay. Now, how does that, that's great when people get to your website. It's one thing to have a really well-positioned, well-written website, but how do people find you? So what is some of the, was, did you do anything intentionally to get people to your website, or was it just, I'm going to take a stab and rewrite some of my copy and maybe it'll just work.
Right. So having a full-time job already, that was kind of the original approach. So I wish that I had more of a magic formula to share with everybody today, but truthfully, that was kind of it. I had stable income and I redid my website, relaunched it. And I said, you know what, maybe there's some things I can be doing, you know, to improve this even more. So it was a lot of small kind of strategic and tactical improvements. Things like making sure that all the page titles on my pages were consistent, making sure that I wrote a unique page description for each page, like the big ones, the homepage, the services page, a project page, like just making things unique instead of just having either nothing or a generic description that shows up on every page or a page title that has your name and UI designer in it. I tried to think a little bit more about what content I was putting into some of those areas of my site, rewriting a lot of my URLs, the page slugs, making them shorter and simpler and fewer, breaks and stop words, things like that. I'm not an expert on this stuff. I didn't know a lot about it, but it just seemed kind of logical. Like, there's things on my website that I haven't really paid attention to. And I think the reputation that SEO kind of has as a whole might prevent people from even caring about doing that. But I think there's a lot that people can be doing to improve their visibility with some simple changes.
But it sounds like you weren't building hundreds of little landing pages that targeted every city in New York or anything like that. You didn't do any of that kind of stuff. You just kind of kept it simple.
Yeah. It was really simple. So I'll give you a little bit of the secret sauce. And I actually wrote about this. I have a huge article, the biggest one I've ever written. It's like 5,500 words. And it's all about getting more clients from your website.
Oh, cool.
So I tried to take a step back and think, what are clients actually searching for? Mm-hmm. And how do they search? So, some clients might know about Dribbble. They might know about Behance. And again, this is somewhat designer focused because that's kind of what I specialize in. But what are clients searching for? And what I kind of came up with was there's three main things. The task that in their mind, in their words, they want completed. So it might be UX design, might be UI design, it might be a website development, something like that. A geographic location. So if they're in, New York, they might type in UI designer in New York. Or mm-hmm. if they're in California, they probably want to work with someone in their general region.
Sure.
That could be a city or a state. And the third thing was the type of person they want to hire. So it could be a freelancer, it could be a consultant, it could be an agency, again, whatever their word is for what they want. So on my page titles on my site, it's very simple. It's Matt Olpinski, freelance UI designer, New York. Those are like the three things. So when a client is searching, and I found that many, many people do this, they, especially people from New York City, they'll go to Google and they'll type in freelance UX designer, New York. Because that's exactly what they're looking for. And my site is ranking very, very highly for those specific things. And I didn't know that at the time doing it. It just seemed like a logical, step to take. And so I've kind of been reverse engineering this whole thing as it's been unfolding in my career. But those are kind of the three things that I've identified. And I've validated this with some of my clients as well, that those are typically the things that they're searching for. So I think if people can integrate that alone into some of their SEO methodology, that would help a lot.
And you can also use, once you have enough search traffic, you can use like Google Search Console, which will give you an idea of what keywords people are actually typing in. And I'm sure over time you can start to see what combinations of words have brought people to your site and where did they land on your site. Because nowadays we don't get, unfortunately, keyword data from Google Analytics any longer. That's really the only way to find that out. You mentioned that people have, and I've noticed that myself, even when I look for different service providers, I do the same thing. I geography, task, and then do I want an agency? Do I want a consultant? Do I want a freelancer? Have you tried anything like, have you created, say, UX consultant in New York landing page or anything like that and tried creating or tried kind of opening up the entry points, I guess, on your website based on different variations or different subtleties that people might be searching for?
I haven't yet, but it sounds like that could be a nice plug for another one of your tools that might be coming out soon.
Well, that actually, maybe. Right Message, unfortunately, doesn't have any SEO benefits. It just is for on-page copy. But I was just curious because I know, for instance, there's a lot of people and companies who really have done a lot with saying, okay, well, these are, like you just said, there's three different kind of components that go into a qualified search term or a search phrase. And, you're not an agency, but there's a chance, I'd say probably more of an extreme chance that somebody looking for an agency might actually want to work with you instead. They just may not know it. So, by capturing agency traffic, you might gain some benefit there. It's like, for instance, with back when I was running PlanScope, which was a project management tool, we catered to freelancers and agencies, and it was tricky because they're not exactly synonyms. Google does a good job nowadays at knowing what related words are. So, you know, you search for, I'm blanking on synonym examples, but we all know what the synonym is. But, you know, they do a good job at figuring that stuff out. Whereas an agency is not a synonym of a freelancer, but it's just a different model for delivering the same results at the end of the day, say a website or, you know, a branding project or something like that. So it's something that, I mean, it doesn't sound like you need it now with the lead gen you're currently generating, but could be interesting, you know, just as a almost an experiment to see, well, what if I started creating a lot of specific, you know, content pieces or whatnot that target certain phrases, what impact that might have. Now, let me ask you this. So in terms of building authority for your domain, did you do anything around that? Did you actively go out and try to get people to link to either your marketing site, or did you create content like blog content that would be authoritative pieces of content that would get Google to recognize, okay, this is more than just a marketing site, a sales site. There's a lot of meat here. Did you do any of that?
Yes. I think that kind of comes out in a few different formats, and these have been rolled out, you know, kind of separately over time. The first one was kind of the case studies, I think, on my site. Instead of just showing a project, I actually wrote, there's only six projects or eight projects or something on my site, and each one of them have a lengthy case study where I go into detail about not just the way that I went about the design, but why I was thinking the way I was, and how the decisions I was making were you know, going to impact the client's business. So that was kind of the first thing, is moving from a list of images or a gallery of images with some captions, and kind of flipping that on its head and writing mostly copy that is reinforced with imagery of the design work that I was doing. So that was a big thing. I think the clients found that very valuable. Inserting, you know, testimonials right in there from that specific client on that specific project, instead of a testimonials page or something like that. The second thing was writing a little more verbosely about my services that I offer. So if I'm doing, it's one thing to say I offer UI UX work on my site on the, you know, the homepage or the page title. It's another thing to actually explain what UI and UX design are and like how they be used in a project. So I went through and just wrote not much, just two or three paragraphs of just a little more explanation for clients that are searching. And again, that's probably something I wouldn't have done until I switched my positioning around. You know, instead of just listing what I can do, I actually tell people why that's important for them. And then, yeah, I started a blog. I started writing articles for freelancers and for clients. It's mostly focused on freelancers, but even though that's true, when a client comes to the site and they're seeing that I've written, you know, 60 articles for freelancers and clients and kind of everybody in between, and I'm offering advice and my experience from a client standpoint, I think that still has an impact and value. It kind of validates that, you know, I'm a little bit different than some other people.
There's a lot of risk in hiring somebody, and I think, yeah, the more you do that, the more it lets a prospective client get in your head and see a bit about how does Matt work? How does he come to the table and really dig into a client problem? And that's why I think, a lot of freelancers struggle to think, what do I write about on my blog? And I think there's a ton of value in just saying, say you did a sales meeting this week, right, with a new prospect. Well, without giving too much detail, how did, you know, what are some of the ideas that came from that? Or maybe you had a client who, I'm spitballing an idea here, but one of our clients years ago at the agency was a real estate broker who had read a book about, that was by one of the guys, Keller Williams, who wrote a book on follow-up for real estate agents. So specifically, you know, how should you think about following up with people that you sold houses to, because chances are within 5 years, they're going to sell that house again and you want to be front of mind so they come back to you. And so he came to us and he didn't know anything about software, knew nothing about software, but he knew that he had a phone with a calendar on it. And he wanted to know, is there any way that something could be built that could let him type in, okay, I sold Matt a house on, you know, December 15th, 2017. And then like it would just kind of create calendar entries, right? In his phone to call you, right? And say, you know, a month later, hey, how are the neighbors? Did you meet anyone cool? You know, that kind of stuff, right? What was interesting is just all the things that went into how that brainstorming went, that sales discussion was, right? How we thought about, well, have you, you know, you could do this, you could do that. And I think there's a lot of benefit, not only for myself and reflecting on, you know, say what went well in that meeting, what are some of the takeaways that we both got, but I could see some potential future client getting a lot of benefit out of being almost like a fly on the wall and seeing how did that operate? How did that run? How did Brennan and his team do that? Because I just think I think a lot of us think it's mundane and stupid, but I mean, the fact of the matter is the really expensive and in demand, say software developers are the ones who are constantly live blogging what they're learning, what kind of new tools are trying out, and then creating content that shows, you know, here's how to do this with React or something like that, right? And it really goes a long way. And I think even though to us it might seem, you know, who the heck wants to read any of this stuff? I do think that, you know, even though it might not, or could, but it might not send a ton of Google traffic to us or something like that, it's still something that when you're doing your due diligence in vetting a potential person that you're going to spend a lot of money on, that's the kind of stuff that I like. That's why a lot of the people that I end up hiring myself are people that share publicly in the open, maybe on Twitter or on their blog. Like I just hired an SEO guy who constantly is kind of tweeting and blogging about things he's doing on his client projects and charts about, like, you know, analytics charts on all his client projects on how well they're doing. And some, like, you know, just it's obvious he knows his stuff. And it's easy, I think, for anyone to write really convincing sales copy, but that's a different thing to be able to back your persuasive sales copy with that sort of, you know, in the mind of Matt Olpinsky or something content, you know?
I think the case studies are a good kind of view into the way I do things. That's the way I try to write them anyway, so that a client doesn't have to look through, you know, a bunch of articles to try to piece together how I think. You know, they can look at my work, which is, you know, right there on the landing, my homepage. So they can kind of click into what they're interested in and actually read about how that came to life. And it's about where it came from and where it went. So I always try to include, you know, the old version of the thing that existed before I got my hands on it. And I think seeing that transition is really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you found with the content, like blog wise, does that bring in a good amount of organic traffic, or are most people still coming to your marketing site?
Well, so the blog is, it's all integrated together on my site. Right. So when I'm writing stuff, posting it on social media, things like that, it certainly does drive traffic. A lot of it is freelancers, and I mean, that kind of converts into subscribers, but there have been a handful of project inquiries that I've received from potential clients that were reading an article or found some advice or liked what I was writing about. And so that's pretty cool.
So even though your blog kind of targets peers in a way, have you found that people who opt in through your blog end up ever becoming clients? Or is it, I guess what I'm getting at is, so I know you have content that is geared towards helping other freelancers, and yeah, that content has call to actions that get people, you know, on your email list and so on. Yeah. Does that drive any consulting client sales, or is it pretty detached in that your consulting clients generally stick to the services Matt provides and that sort of stuff, whereas the freelancers are in the other realm?
Yeah, I think they're fairly separated and distinct. And I kind of built the site that way for now. Not that that's necessarily the right way to do it, but I think that's the most obvious in the footer of my site. It's literally split in two, and one, you know, side is for, you know, tell me about your project, is for clients. The other one is, you know, level up your career, join my newsletter. They're in two different colors. It's very, very obvious that these are for two separate groups of people. So I think that when the client comes to my site, they're looking for a few things that they're probably looking for on other sites too. I'm sure I'm not the only site that they visit. So, you know, they're looking for work, they're looking for, you know, testimonials, they're looking for experience and quality and things like that. And if they stumble over to my blog, you know, it might, you know, reinforce or reaffirm their decision to contact me, but I don't think there's a ton of overlap there.
But I think, like we just talked about, stumbling over to your blog, even though it might not be client focused, it's more peer focused, it's still beneficial in learning that, learning your professionalism, I guess. As
like you said, it's authority. It's how does Matt conduct himself?
Yeah, right. So you mentioned something that I'd like to unpack a bit more. You mentioned that a lot of the people who are probably submitting leads to your site, if I was Googling for freelance UX designer in New York, even though you might be one of the top ranking websites, I'm still probably going to check out other people's sites too. Because I'm, you know, again, I'm in a way shopping around. How have you found, assuming that a lot of your clients end up doing the same, what's been something that you've done to further kind of solidify the likelihood that they end up going with you?
I mean, I think that kind of ties back into the whole way I'm positioning myself. I think a lot of people just aren't doing that. And I probably have more competition if people were doing more of that. But I think the design of my site, I think, again, the copywriting, you know, trying to really get into the client's head when they first hit my page, you know, versus when they're what they're reading on other people's sites, I think is a huge impact. Like on my site, I think they can arrive and say, oh, that's exactly what I wanted to hear, or that relates to me, or, you know, and on someone else's site, it might be like, hey, here's my work. Give me a shout if you want, or it's, you know, more informal. It's not as direct. It's not as targeted and focused on them specifically. So as I've continued to do more projects, get more clients, have more experience and understanding how clients kind of think, you know, I've been able to go back and tweak some of the language and the design and the, you know, buttons and calls to action and things like that.
I was going to say that I think my suspicion is that, you know, a lot of people like you who may be technically a freelance UX designer, like you said, a lot of the people who are probably also ranking are people who have the generic kind of portfolio, you know, very light on content sort of thing. Whereas I'd imagine a lot of people who maybe take the advice of don't call yourself a freelancer, call yourself a business consultant. And then maybe they focus only on the problem without including things like UX designer in the page titles or whatnot, they might be missing out on that traffic, but you end up getting the upper hand because you're the one speaking in the language of business, whereas the others are speaking the language of design. I mean, you're doing both, but that alone is probably what I'm guessing. Again, I haven't interviewed your clients or anything like that, but my hypothesis is that you're coming out on top because you're targeting the same traffic that, you know, Joe UX designer from New York also is targeting with their marketing site, which is really just a, hey, I'm Joe, here are my hobbies, here's a grid of portfolio pictures I've done or something, right? But you're one-upping them because you're focused on the problem, but you're targeting in a way the need, if that makes sense, right? Like, so you're targeting people who are actively looking for UX consultants. They find you. If I'm Joe, but you're the one who's speaking the language of business on top of obviously proving yourself as a UX designer too. So I think there's probably a lot of benefit to that too.
Yeah, there's, and that's a good point. It got me thinking, there's a lot of depth to my site in terms of pages and structure and content that I think a lot of other people don't have. So I'm not saying that, you know, if you want to rank, you have to go out and write 100 blog articles, but there's a lot more depth to the pages and content, so that, you know, all of those things, even though a client might not be directly looking for half of the pages that are on my site or that are even hard to get to, it's still driving traffic to the site, regardless of who it is. If it's a potential client or a freelancer or, you know, a designer, developer, it doesn't matter. It's still all the content, everything that I'm doing continues to drive traffic back to my site. And that obviously that impacts, you know, ranking a lot. So
yeah.
I think just, you know, the other big factor is age of the domain. I think, you know, I put my site up in 2009, I think, and it was awful. But I was a freshman in college, And it really didn't have a purpose other than showing what I was working on in my freshman year of college. But the domain has existed since then. And I think as I was freelancing all through college, as you know, and you know, all through my full-time job 3 years after college, all of that time working on the site, polishing the site, refining the site, when it finally came time to change my positioning, there was 6 or 7 years of kind of this traffic already going to the site, even though it wasn't a ton of traffic. Sure. Still, you know, it had a good base, foundation.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately for those listening who want to start a new site, the age question is going to, you know, isn't going to help in any way. But I know myself, I've personally, and also have friends who have created brand new sites who it definitely benefits, I think, to have an older domain, but it's not like a kiss of death if you've got a one day old domain.
No, and that's not why I said that, of course. I think there's...
Right. But it does help. I mean, I would say, I would take away from what you've been saying that it sounds like the few things that you've done that have been the most beneficial have been, first off, you just cleaned up your general structure. You looked at what are the page shuttles that I have? What are the, you know, the URLs that, you know, I'm submitting to Google, and also what's on them. And what am I saying once a human being shows up? How am I showing what I'm doing? And the benefit of focusing more on content, which is, again, not as always easy for a designer, is Google doesn't index design, it index words, right? So content helps in that sense, where if you're writing a lot on not just saying I do UX or UI work, but also if you go into what you mean by UX work and why it's beneficial and so on, that's just more fodder for Google to reward, right? So by doing that, but also I really do think, I'm guessing that a lot of the blog posts you've done that might not be targeting clients per se, still allow potential clients to get in your head and get an idea of what it's like to work with you and so on. And I mean, again, you've done all this while still running a full-time business yourself. So it's not like it needed to be something, I mean, it sounds like something you iterated on over time. And, you know, it's not like a thing you blocked out 3 months to do. It doesn't need to be overwhelming, I think.
No, I don't think that anything I've done has been so groundbreaking that other people can't do it. I think there's, like I said, there's very simple things. Just pay attention, pay more attention to the small stuff, pay attention to goofy things like, you know, alt descriptions on your images and, you know, the length of your URLs and the kind of order of pages on your site, the page titles. And all of this is, you know, outlined in great detail in that article that I mentioned at the beginning of the call. You know, staying consistent on social media. Don't call yourself one thing on Dribbble and the other thing on your website. You know, there's just these like simple things that I think people don't like pay as much attention to as they should. And I think if they just kind of hone in and really focus on like cleaning some of that stuff up, then they'll get a lot better results.
So Matt, where can people find out more about what you're doing, especially since you have a lot of content targeting or helping, I should say, targeting sounds a bit ruthless, but helping freelancers who listen to this show, where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
So I try to put everything on my website. It's mattlipinski.com. The article that I referenced a few times in this on this talk with you is actually on my homepage. So if you just go to mattlipinski.com and scroll down, it's called The Ultimate Guide to Getting More Clients from Your Website. So if you click on that link, it'll take you to the article and people can read all of the details on a lot of the stuff we've been talking about. And there's a handful of pages, you know, for about what I'm doing, the work that I'm doing, who I've been working with, and of course the article section and the products and resources area where people can kind of, you know, gather more information and look at some of the stuff that I have for them.
Fantastic. Yeah. And if you're watching this or listening to this on W Freelance, we'll directly link to both of those, both your website and that article. Matt, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate this. I'm always, it's one of those things I love systematic and scalable methods of getting clients. And I think a lot of what you have to say isn't overwhelming. It's not something that's going to require you to go out and become or hire an SEO expert. It's just taking a little common sense and applying it to your flagpole, your place on the internet, and making it a little more attractive to potential clients.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt.
All right. Thank you, Brendan.
You've been listening to the first season of the Double Your Freelancing Podcast. To download the book that we've put together that covers everything that we've discussed, all the resources we've linked to, and actionable takeaways from this season, head on over to doubleyourfreelancing.com/season1 and download it for free.